three matters on its oral submission docket. And in the order of their appearance, they are 050466, Coastal Oil and Gas Corporation and Coastal Oil and Gas USA versus Garza Energy Trust et al. From Hidalgo County and the 13th Court of Appeals District. Justices O'Neill and Wainwright are not sitting in this cause. Docket number 050538, in the estate of Marvin Nash, deceased, from Angelina County in the 9th Court of Appeals District. And docket number 050613, in Ray Bear County Criminal District Attorney's Office, an original proceeding. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these arguments and will take a brief recess between the arguments. We expect to complete all of them before noon. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 050466, Coastal Oil and Gas versus Garza Energy Trust.
May it please the court, Ms. Miller will present arguments for petitioners. Petitioners have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This case squarely presents for the first time the question of whether there should be a trespass for subsurface fracturing in the state of Texas. We believe the answer to that question is no for four reasons. The first reason is a policy reason. We have production left in this state that will not be obtained without fracturing. Everybody agrees, all experts in this case agree, all the industry agrees, that fracturing is absolutely necessary to recover the lion's share of the oil and gas production that is left in this state. As a matter of public policy, we should encourage fracturing, not penalize it. To do otherwise is going to cause waste. The second reason why we think that the answer should be there is no cause of action is that we simply do not control the path of a frack. Neither current technology nor rock mechanics allow us to control the direction or path the frack is going to take once we pump the fluid down into the wellbore and out through the perforations in that wellbore. It does not allow us to know in advance the path that's going to follow. Nature's going to tell us the path. It can grow in three directions. It can grow up, it can grow out, it can grow long. Those are things that we do not control, particularly as in this case, when what we're trying to determine is where a frack crack 2 miles deep in the rock and out to a length no deeper in depth than the edge of this envelope exists. The third reason is we already have a remedy for parties whose property might be drained because of fractures on offsetting wells. There is no need to recognize another trespass cause of action to protect the plaintiffs in this case or to protect offsetting mineral owners. Those well-recognized remedies are, in this case, suing your operator for failure to protect if you are being drained, or if you are an offsetting mineral interest owner who is unleased, the remedy of self-help. Drilling your own well, fracking it, and then producing whatever you can legally produce out of that well bore. The fourth reason is, as my partner Jane Weber would tell you, we are not asking for a King's X here on fracking. If fracking causes damage to the reservoir, if there is some situation where one fracks negligently and fracks into a water zone, and the water then gets into the producing zone and waters it out and causes reservoir damage, the loss of otherwise recoverable reserves, there is a cause of action for that. The Elif case, Elif versus Texon, says there is a cause of action for negligent operations that injure a reservoir. We're not trying to have a King's X on that. We're not trying to have a King's X on illegal wells. If an operator fracks an illegal well, he is not protected because no production that comes out of an illegal well is protected production. There is no King's X here for fracking. What we're talking about is no cause of action for drainage by a fracked well.
Let me ask you about number three, the alternative remedies. I gather that they all require the adjacent mineral owner to incur considerable expense. I mean, it's one thing to say you have self-help, but drilling wells not inexpensive. So I take it with all of the remedies that you say are alternative, except maybe pooling, there's some significant cost involved.
Well, let's take the situation of the cost involved in drilling your own well. Yes, there are costs involved. In these wells, in these deep wells, they were $3 to $4 million, three plus to drill and another million to frack. Those are significant costs. But, Your Honor, I think that does not quite recognize the rule of capture and the remedy of self-help.
I just want to be sure that all of them are, the remedies have a significant cost as well.
The remedy has a cost to the person that it has to drill the well, yes. But that person has no right to the minerals underneath his track without drilling him. You can't put a fence around your track and say, I own this 360 acres, there are minerals underneath them, and I don't have to do anything, and you're not allowed to drain them. That's not our law in Texas. Rule of capture says anybody has the right to drill as many legal wells as they can on their track, and to produce them within the rules and confines of the Railroad Commission, and to produce whatever comes out of them, even if it's drained. And so, yes, it will cost them to drill, but all they have is the right or opportunity to try to get their own reserves, not to keep their reserves from being drained. As to a leased mineral owner, their cost would be the cost of making demand upon the royalty owner to protect them for drainage. It may just be the demand that the royalty owner hasn't done it. I mean, the lessee hasn't done it, and then the lessee would drill. Obviously, if that doesn't work, there's a lawsuit. Lawsuits have costs to bring, but it's a breach of contract action, and if they prevail, they would recover their attorney's fees to do so. Let me turn now to talking about these four reasons perhaps in a little bit more depth. Let's talk about the policy reason that fracking should be encouraged and not penalized. Fracking is the universal completion technique that we use in drilling and completing in tight gas sands or any reservoir in which there is very low permeability. As many of the commentators have told us, we're past picking the low fruit on the tree in this state. The production we have left in this state is going to be production that is harder to get. The main producing areas in this state, the Barnett Shale that we hear so much about, would not exist but for the technique of fracking. Everybody knew there were reserves in the Barnett Shale for a long time, but they couldn't get out until they could frack them, until they developed the fracking techniques. In Hidalgo County, we have, where this lawsuit is, we have 1,100 wells that have been fracked. 1,100 wells. On plaintiff's acreage alone, which this is the map I've put on the board, which is also in your brief. The yellow is plaintiff acreage. All the wells drilled on the yellow acreage are wells drilled by Coastal. Every single one of those wells is fracked, every one of them. The need to frack is to prevent waste. If we do not frack, we will not recover reserves. In Railroad Commission versus Manziel, which was a water flood case, this court had to look at whether the encroachment across a lease line by water is the type of encroachment that should give rise to a cause of action for trespass. It was a water flood project that had been approved by the Railroad Commission, single lease project where the operator wanted to inject water for the sole purpose of flooding water across his property, knowing full well that as he put water in and it went across his property, it was going to cross onto the other side. And the purpose was to do that to capture all the possible reserves he could capture in front of that water. The court, in determining whether or not it was proper to enjoin that action as a trespass, set up the initial analysis. And it said clearly, water encroachment is a thing trespassing. But the issue is not whether it is a thing trespassing. The issue is whether it is the type of thing for which trespass should exist, and the person doing the pushing should be liable in trespass for that.
Does it make a difference in Manziel that there was a commission order authorizing that trespass or not?
It makes a difference in the facts, but it does not make a difference in the policies. In that case, the Railroad Commission did approve the water injection. In this case, the Railroad Commission does not require the permitting or approval of a fracking technique. It has been asked on many occasions to adopt rules about fracking, particularly on short acreage, wells that are drilled on less than a regular density or are shorter to a leasing line than regular rules. In each instance, the Railroad Commission has refused to adopt those policies. They do require that fracking be noted on the completion paper, the interval frack, the amount of proppant used, so that information is available for everybody to see. But they don't require a permit. And I think the reason they don't is probably threefold. The Railroad Commission has the right to pass rules for two things: to protect correlative rights and to prevent waste. Fracking is not causing waste. Fracking will prevent waste. It will get reserves that you cannot get otherwise. What about correlative rights? Well, once again, correlative rights are the rights to have an opportunity to recover, to do legally what everybody else is doing legally. And they haven't found that it's necessary to regulate fracturing to protect correlative rights. I think the third reason is straight, it's just not impractical. Fracking is done as a completion technique to a well. A rig is on, you drill a well, you have to log it, you have to figure out if you have anything down there you're going to try to perforate, and once you do that, that's when you design your frack program and that's when you actually frack the well.
Ms. Miller, those arguments on the policy issue are very compelling, but there appears to be an issue on this on the standing issue as to whether or not a royalty interest owner has standing as opposed to the actual possessor of the land. Could you address that?
Yes, sir, I can. The royalty owner does not have standing to bring a trespass claim. A trespass action is a cause of action for injury to possession of the property. The royalty owner does not have possession of the minerals. A lease, an oil and gas lease, unlike a lease of a piece of land or a building, is a defeasible fee interest. It conveys to the lessee the exclusive right and ownership of the minerals. The minerals in place in the ground, the exclusive right to produce them, the exclusive right to sell them. So they have it in the ground and they have it at the surface. We are a ownership in place state, so it is possession in the ground. What a royalty owner has, and this was most clearly stated in the recent natural gas versus pool case, is during the term of the lease, it has the right to receive royalties, the payment of money upon the production and sale of those minerals. And it has a reversionary right in the interest should the lease ever terminate. If this lease ever terminates, if it fails to have production or operation sometime in the future, the lease terminates, and the royalty owner will receive back the mineral estate. But while the lease is in place, the royalty owner has no property possessionary right in those minerals. Because of that, they do not have standing to bring a cause of action for injury to the possession of those minerals. Royalty owners can't bring trespass to try title cases, which is another possessory type cause of action. Royalty owners can't sue for partition of the minerals or prevent partition of the minerals, all under the same guise that they do not have a ownership right in possession of those minerals. Now, they have a mineral interest. Nobody doubts that. But their mineral interest, while it's under lease, is the right to receive the royalty. We think that's why they don't have standing in this case.
Let me ask you a narrow question about jury question 8.
Jury question 8, all right.
You say that the question did not properly submit the contract measure of damages. If that argument should prevail, do you see the remedy rendition or remand for a new trial?
I believe the remedy would be rendition.
And did you object to the question that it did not submit the contract measure properly?
Yes, sir, we did. We had a specific objection on that.
I have a question on the Coastal was required to protect Share 13 from drainage, correct? And
yes,
there was a lawsuit, a cause of action against Coastal,
yes,
by Garza for that. What and damages were awarded? What impact weren't damages awarded for that?
Well, Your Honor, that's the question of whether the right measure of damage was set. But if I might explain that just a moment.
Okay, and when you answer it, explain to what extent, if the right measure of damages were awarded, what does that do to the fracturing trespass lawsuit, if anything?
All right. A lawsuit for failure to protect from drainage has two things that you have to find to have liability. And these are set out in Amco versus Alexander and in the Mandel case, very clear in Texas law. You have to show that someone failed to act, your operator failed to act as a reasonably prudent operator under the same or similar circumstances, and that they failed to protect from substantial drainage, which they should have done with some expectation of profit to themselves. If you do that, the standard of damage is what the royalties would have been paid had they protected from drainage, had they drilled the well to protect it from drainage. There is absolutely no evidence in this record presented by the plaintiffs on what royalties they would have obtained had a well been drilled to protect from drainage. The question, the subpart of that question, Your Honor, is what does that do to the trespass case? I believe that trespass does not exist here. It is simply a breach of contract action. What they are suing on is the subject matter of their contract. They are suing in trespass for drainage for the failure to act as a reasonably prudent operator to protect them from drainage, which is their contract action. If there are no damages for the drainage case, they could have gotten them, they just asked the wrong standard for them, there is no trespass claim and there are no trespass.
Just to follow up, if we said that a trespass action did exist, what impact would recovery for the failure to operate as a prudent operator, if they recovered damages for that?
It's two different damages. You would basically have two different measures of damages, and I suppose that would require an election from them at that point, if they had a proper question on trespass, which I don't think they do. But the damages are separate. Trespass doesn't require the proof of reasonably prudent operator or the proof of substantial damage, and the measure would be the amount drained. Contract requires reasonably prudent operator, substantial drainage, and what would you have gotten had you drilled the well? Those are two different things.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you, Counselor. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Jones will present argument for the respondents.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Let me talk right now immediately about the measure of damages. Question just asked. This court in HECI versus Neal in 1998 held that a royalty owner has a cause of action for damage or for compensation for damage to a reservoir underlying an oil and gas lease. At that time, this court also said, we've never had the occasion to opine upon the measure of damages that should be crafted for such a cause of action. I need to say two things about that holding. First is Coastal and the amicus contend that damage to the reservoir has some other meaning than the palpable cracking and fracturing of the reservoir rock underneath that land. I don't know what could be more pertinent to damage to the reservoir than the actual fracking and cracking of the rock.
Well, one thing that could be more damaging is you can't get any more minerals out.
That's true, and to the extent that the minerals are removed by the fracking or trespassing, you're never going to recover those either.
Well, somebody is.
Yes, and indeed that's the case. That's the case, and that's what we're here complaining about today.
Let me ask you, I'm unclear about your position about the adequacy of the contract remedy or other remedies. In your brief, under a heading about why the sky is not falling, you refer to the General Land Office's amicus letter and say that many times the option to pool and compensatory royalties remedy this kind of problem adequately. And then you say at another place that the self-help remedy, which would be to drill your own well or to frack it, doesn't exist because the lessor can't do that. But it seems that the obvious answer to that is that he could demand that his lessee do it or his operator. And so I'm wondering whether you think the contract remedy is adequate, or the pooling and the other things that have been mentioned, or not.
Your Honor, may I approach this map? For example, Coastal has the authorities. You can see they formed a unit. But they didn't form a unit when they drilled the Coastal Fee Number 1. They could have, and we wouldn't even be here today.
So it seems to me that the answer then is that the pooling would be an adequate remedy irrespective of the trespass claim. You don't need the trespass to be whole.
That is correct, and the pooling is very inexpensive. And it could have been done. Coastal did pool when it was to their economic interest. They didn't pool when it wasn't.
But I'm just trying to get at the argument, which I take it from your brief, it is not an argument that if we don't have a cause of action for trespass, we're going to suffer injury that we can't find remedy for. You think that there usually, in fact, in every case, is some remedy.
In this case, I don't think there was a remedy, and the reason is because we've got the common lessee situation.
And this would be a remedy if you, as you just said, if they had pooled in a different way.
Indeed. That would be a remedy for this wrong. But I think we need the trespass cause of action to prompt that sort of responsible response to this situation. This was not a responsible response to not pool, to not pay compensatory royalty when they had the opportunity. I would also, before I leave the contract measure of damages, this court held in Kerr McGee versus Helton that one measure of damages for breach of the implied covenant to protect was the traditional method, what I call the traditional method or the hypothetical well. In that model of damages, the plaintiff's expert must hypothesize an offset well. He has to hypothesize that it will be drilled without problem. He has to hypothesize that it will be completed without problem. He has to hypothesize that it will be produced without problem. And then that expert calculates the estimated ultimate recovery of that well times the price at the time times the royalty interest to derive damages. I thought it was significant that this court said that that was one measure of damages. We believe another measure of damages should be the amount of oil and gas drained by the draining well from the offsetting lease, or from my lease, my plaintiff's lease in this case. And the reason
about which there is still a lot of hypothesis.
But you've got a well bore, you've got some objective data, you know what the production rates are, you know what the porosity, that is the space in the rock, is, you know what the permeability is, that's the connectivity between the spaces, you know what the salt water concentration is, you've got all of these reservoir engineering parameters from that well, and reservoir engineers routinely estimate drainage feet or acres of drainage around a well. It's also, not only do we believe it's a more accurate measure, but it's also generally going to be much lower because it's not going to include oil and gas from, if I may approach again, from over here, which would normally be the case. We assume radial drainage around these wells. It would not include royalty on reserves over here. It would only include royalty on reserves on this side of the well being drained by the Coastal Fee Number 1.
Are punitives warranted if it's really unclear as a matter of law whether a tort even occurred?
Your Honor, I want to talk a little bit about that. I think the laws of physics also require us to conclude that there was a fracture here. First, Coastal's expert and my expert both testified that the fracture went across the lease lines. That fracture can be stylized or to appear like this envelope, but it goes bilateral. And the opening here is next to the wellbore. And there's shales on the top and shales on the bottom to limit the growth up. And the width only gets less than half an inch. Coastal put 2,559,000 pounds of bauxite proppant in this crack. Someone with more mathematical skills than I can calculate the volume inside that envelope. And let me step back one second. The experts all agree that the frack proceeds bilaterally. So you got one out each side. It doesn't matter in this case what direction that frack goes in. It's going to cross the line. And
well, my question is, if it's an open question whether fracturing constitutes a trespass, then are punitive damages warranted if a reasonably prudent operator doesn't really know what the legal standard is? And do you really have to know your conduct is unlawful to warrant punitives?
Well, in this case, they designed their computer design on the fracture was 1,100 feet. They knew what they were doing. In fact, and I'm trying to get to Your Honor's question. In fact, the Railroad Commission found that coastal fee number one well, and I refer you to
the question is you're trying to turn the question is whether you're trying to turn a contract claim into a tort claim. And part of the reason we don't do that is because juries in Hidalgo County award $10 million in punitive damages every time you do. So why don't we should we do it here again?
Your Honor, in actions in one case can be both a breach of contract and a tort. In this case, I would like to address that. The Railroad Commission found if I could refer you to our map at tab A, you'll see that what Coastal has not put on here, if I may go to the board, there was a well right here called the Pennzoil fee number one. Coastal was the oil and gas lease lessee from Pennzoil. They acquired a lease from them. That lease was a 25% royalty lease. The yellow part of that chart is only 84%. They have a 16% royalty burden. Coastal acquired share 12, all of share 12, in 1995. They eliminated the royalty burden. It was a 100% revenue lease. They then wanted to locate a well where they've located that one, the coastal fee number one. But there was a problem. The Pennzoil fee number one well, which they already had on that lease, share 12, was closer than 1,200 feet, completed in the same reservoir. So Coastal filed an application for an exception. They wanted the Railroad Commission to approve the location of the coastal fee well. After hearings and evidence, the Railroad Commission found that any reserves produced by that well would come from the offsetting tract, and that Coastal should drill this well over here to recover the reserves. That decision became final. Coastal then decided, we can't do that. If you look at the map on behind tab one of our brief, there's a green outline there. That green outline shows the most productive part of the field. Coastal shut in the Pennzoil fee number one well, which they had drilled before, as to the Vicksburg formation, so they could drill the coastal fee number one, and then they implemented the largest frack in the field on that well to get into the good part of the reservoir under share 13, without the obligation to pay royalty.
And will you tackle Judge Medina's question about standing?
Pardon me?
Will you tackle Judge Medina's question about standing?
Yes. Justice Brister, is that... I'm sorry.
It's your answer.
All right, well...
I can't tell
yes,
you
whether, I will.
I can't tell you whether I'm convinced or not.
No, and I understand that. I didn't know whether or not I needed to. I believe that HGCI versus Neal gives us standing, and that the LF versus Texon case gives us standing, Your Honor. It recognizes a cause of action. There's been a harm. The people who have been harmed are the plaintiffs in this case. They meet the requirements of standing. Theoretically and doctrinally, royalty is a real property interest. It is a fee interest. And I pose the rhetorical question, what is the tort to a real property interest? The tort to a real property interest is trespass. We can't convert personal property. We can't convert real property. Excuse me. Conversion is for personal property. This is like fitting a round peg in a square hole, if you use the traditional analysis of a trespass cause of action. This court recognized that in HGCI versus Neal. They gave the royalty owner a cause of action to seek damages for damage to the reservoir. We believe the reservoir has been damaged in this case, palpably and directly, and that almost a BCF of gas was drained from under Share 13 into the coastal fee number one well where there was no royalty obligation. It was the taking of property without due process or without just compensation.
Just so I'll be clear, there's certainly been an injury because the evidence is that the fracking affected the property. But is there any damage in the sense that recovery of the minerals is lost as opposed to recovery for the plaintiffs? I mean, is there any evidence in this case that because of this activity, no one can recover some of the minerals in the reservoir?
No, Your Honor. That did not occur, but there is a definite amount that was calculated and testified to by our expert anyway as to what was drained from Share 13. And the Railroad Commission found that those reserves produced by the Coastal Fee Number 1 well would come from Share 13. So we believe that there's clear and convincing evidence here that Coastal knew that it was going to be draining reserves from under Share 13 into their 100% owned Coastal Fee Number 1 well, and that fair-minded and reasonable jurors could conclude that there was a trespass. Yes,
sir. I want to ask you two questions. One about the fair-minded jurors in reference to what I understand was a memorandum that was submitted over objection by Coastal involving some reference to illiterate Mexicans in that area, and also Mrs. Miller's contention on the policy reasons why the method that was done to extract this oil is not better than creating a new tort so that there's some different measure of damages.
Let me address the second question first. It's our position that this court can limit this cause of action to the common lessee situation. This court has limited certain rules to the common lessee situation in at least two other cases, Shell versus Stansbury, 1956 Texas Supreme Court case, which excuses notice in the case of a common lessee with drainage. And secondly, in Amoco versus Alexander, common lessee situation, this court held that the lessee cannot dilute its duty to its lessor because of duties to other lessors. The 1977 memo. Sorry. The 1977 memo goes to the implied covenant to develop claim. In the 1977 memo, everyone concentrates on the words that you referred to, Your Honor, but there's also another very key part of that memo, and that key part is, I recommend that Coastal take the calculated risk of drilling on Share 13. They did. Then in 1982, they removed that risk when a judgment communitized all of the royalty interest. There was never a problem with Coastal drilling on Share 13. Yet at the trial, they kept mentioning, oh, tidal problems, may I approach again? Those tidal problems, and it's also in the tab one, the map on tab one in our brief, involved areas up here. There was no reason why they couldn't drill here, but their reason was, if we drill where these red dots are, we're going to have a corresponding obligation to drill there. Well, that's no excuse, as Amoco versus Alexander shows us.
Okay, let me, just before your time runs out, if I spray water on my neighbor's lawn, is that a trespass?
Technically, yes.
Have we ever said so?
You've said in Greg versus Delhi and in the withdrawn opinion in Geo-Viking.
Let's skip over the withdrawn opinions.
Okay. Very good. You said in Greg versus Delhi, this is a subsurface trespass.
I guess your answer.
But
my concern is, if spring water under the surface and sand is a trespass, then throwing sand on top of the surface would have to be a trespass too.
It could be if someone was there.
I think we've specifically left that question open because it turns all nuisance law into trespass law, doesn't it? I mean, every fumes are just air molecules. Light, bright light shining on that's just photons. So
yes, Your Honor.
Really, we have no nuisances left. They're all trespasses.
If they're intentional for the purpose, I think we have to have a little bit more there than just
neither trespass nor nuisance has to be intentional, does it?
Trespass is intentional. Now, whether your actions are intentional actions, I think that's, you know, when you have to intentionally break the clothes, as they said in Old England, and your action is intentional. Otherwise, I suppose it is a negligent trespass, but that gets beyond my analysis of this matter. I'm sorry. Back to the 1977 memo. So it is our position that memo resolved that issue, and it was introduced to demonstrate that issue was resolved, and it did not excuse Coastal's failure to develop as a reader, recruiter, operator in a timely manner.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
To start by addressing the Judge Willett's question on punitive damages in fracking. This court has never determined, never, ever, not in Gregg, not in Manziel, not in the Geo-Viking case, that fracture is a trespass. That is an open question. You asked the question, Judge Willett, as whether or not we can have punitive damages for something like this. All of the parties in this lawsuit, all of the experts have told us we do not control the path. Three quotes from the record. A fracture will go where it wants to go and not where we want it to go. That is a quote from Dr. Economides, the plaintiff.
You can have punitive not just for intentionally doing it, but for being substantially certain it will occur.
Let me address the substantial certain, because the next quote is from Dr. Holdich. We have no control over the direction or the size or shape of the hydraulic frack. That's our expert. Third quote, fracks can unintentionally travel directions and lengths for which they were not designed. That is the Schlumberger expert. Schlumberger is the company whose business it is to do fracks. What we have is a design here. There was no evidence, zero evidence in the record put on by Dr. Economides to determine where that frack went after it was fracked. Dr. Economides' position was, if you design in the office, in a computer, a fracture design, and if you pump it the way you designed it, it must have gone where that design goes.
I know you can't tell in advance how far it may extend, but can you tell after it has extended whether it has in fact extended beneath a certain property?
There is a way to do 3D modeling after the fact, which in this case Dr. Holdich did, where you take production and pressure and reservoir information after you do the frack to determine not the path, but the drainage area. He did that work. The evidence of the record is that the azimuth, the direction from north, south, east, and west, is generally going to be parallel to fault. And if that azimuth applies, a frack, if it went 1,100 feet as designed, would have crossed the line, some portion of it. But what they were talking about was the propped length, the grains of bauxite. Bauxite grain, Dr. Economides went out to 1 grain of bauxite, which was the size of a poppy seed, that a poppy seed would have traveled across that lease line. That's not the drainage area. The effective length of a prop is always smaller than the propped length of a prop. Nobody talked, Dr. Economides didn't talk about effective length. He talked about prop length. In the 3D modeling done after the fact on actual production from the well, the only evidence in the record was Dr. Holdich, because Dr. Economides said he didn't do that, even though his book that he was so proud of said that's the only way you can determine what the drainage area is. In this case, the evidence from that modeling was that while part of the prop, part of those bauxites might have crossed the line, in the most prolific area, this zone being fracked was 500 feet wide. There was a bottom frack, top frack, middle frack. The middle frack was the only one that was affected, because in reality, this is one of the poorest wells in the field, even after frack. That one, the effective drainage area was less than 500 feet, was less than the 467 feet from the well bore. That's the only evidence in the record. So what's happened is the design is the liability. The fact that one designed it on a computer that is a 2D model, the computer says we're going to assume that a frack goes no higher up and down than 150 feet. If we assume that, we solve only for length and width. That frack is applied in a 3D world. With a 500-foot interval, there is no 150-foot limit on how far it can grow up and down.
That's all very interesting in the, I guess, oil and gas field and scientific world, where these experts can't predict the results of their methods to extract this oil. But as Justice Brister said, certainly they're substantially certain that something will occur when they use these methods, and that something is to drain or create to get the oil, right?
Oh, absolutely. But, Your Honor, that's true of every single well drilled anywhere. One does not drill a well to try to produce as little as they possibly can.
Understood.
Every time you put a well down there, your goal is to get as much as you can out of there. And in a tight gas sand, you can't get anything if you do not frack. And if you frack according to their test, a prop length to go no more than 467 feet, you will not have a commercial well.
Thank you. Any further questions? The cause is submitted and the court will now take a brief recess.